I'm Don.
And I'm Kate.
And welcome to Because Reasons,
a multimedia redemption podcast
where we take your beloved guilty pleasures in movies, books, and more
and decide whether or not
they're worthless trash. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Because Reasons. I'm Don.
And I'm Kate.
And we're here today to go in a slightly different direction than we've gone before. So the first three episodes that we did were suggestions from each other and just sort of things that were out in the ether. So we did the interview.
Yes.
And that was just sort of something that everybody was talking about. And then we each, you know, sort of took on a piece of culture that, you know, each of us liked or that came from book club or something. So today is the first episode that we'll be doing that is actually a submission.
Yes.
And we actually have real reasons why people like this submission. So it's sort of, you know, the first real episode to give you a real taste of what the show should be like.
We're very excited.
Kate looks thrilled right now.
Thrilled. I'm very thrilled.
Thrilled. So, to kick off sort of the real format of Because Reasons, today we're doing The Last Unicorn.
Yes, which one of our listeners, Georgia, submitted.
Yeah, and we have a few people, actually, that like this. So we have Georgia out there, we have Beth, and so she said, you know, I think that you guys should do Because Reasons. It's a great example of...
Or should do The Last Unicorn.
The Last Unicorn Reasons. On Because Reasons.
Or we could just review us.
We could review ourselves.
We're awesome.
Well, I mean, I feel like that would be so meta. So The Last Unicorn came out in the 80s.
Yes, the moment we mentioned even thinking about doing it, you know, several people were jumping out of the woodwork of, oh, I saw that when I was younger. It's mm-hmm. such a good movie. It was so informative of me when I was... You know, like a preteen.
Yeah, and that was sort of, I think, the general theme was that, you know, oh my God, it really helped me when I was a kid. So some of the reasons, and that's what we do here at Because Reasons, we like to, you know, we don't want to just review something because, it, you know, that you love because it's so bad it's good. We want something that you legitimately think is great that most people might not.
Yes.
So Beth actually said it's great for the animation of the period. And that the interaction of the characters is you know, it's a really character-driven animation, whereas, you know, other fantasy adventure cartoons or things, you know, are more driven by the action, more driven by, you know, just doing some fun special effects, whereas this is, it sets itself apart from other films as being an actually character-driven mm-hmm. Piece of animation.
Yeah, and then Georgia said that she really enjoyed the musical score, saying mm-hmm. that was something that stood out apart from some of the other animated movies. And the King Haggard character.
Yes.
That he was, you know, played by Christopher Lee and just a very memorable and committed performance.
Yeah, and rest in peace, right? Mm-hmm. He just died this past week.
Just... I mean, he was
such memorable characters.
Author.
Dracula.
Lord Summerisle from The Wicker Man.
Saruman.
Love.
He was also in the first three Star Wars, or episodes
yeah.
1, 2, and 3.
Is he Count Dooku?
Something like yeah. that, yeah. It's been a while, a long time since I've seen those movies. I've seen 4, 5, and 6 quite a bit. I think I've only ever seen 1, 2, and 3 once each. I didn't
yeah,
know.
I
never even saw episode 3. I've not seen episode 3.
Save yourself the time.
I couldn't make it there. And Georgia said that she said she really appreciated the story overall, that it was a tragic kind of love story. The unicorn had to choose between love and eternal life. She chooses eternal life to join the freed unicorns, and it was a very powerful movie for me. So sort of Sophie's Choice, but with unicorns. Mm-hmm. So, Kate, have you ever seen this movie?
Yes, we were actually discussing this before we started. I saw this, I was probably first or second grade when I saw this movie.
Okay, so this would sort of be right.
Yeah, I saw it once. I was sick at the time. You know, someone had loaned it to me. To be honest, I have almost no memory of this movie. I remember something about a butterfly with sunglasses because that stood out to me. And I think there's some type of, like, cat character. But when I'm coming to it with mostly a blank slate. I don't really have an emotional attachment to it. I just sort of have seen it, don't remember it, but knew it existed.
I've seen it once. I saw it as an adult. And I'll probably say I didn't give it a very fair chance. And to be fair, it's been probably 10 years. It has been at least 10 years since I've seen the movie. So, I mean, I don't remember enough about it that I'm like, oh, this is why I did or didn't like the movie. So I think we're both coming to it with, have some kind of idea what it is and what it's about, but I think we've got pretty fresh eyes on it.
Yeah.
So the reasons are the music.
The animation.
It's character-driven, which I like. I mean, I like the notion of a children's story actually having, you know, fully developed characters.
Which is wonderful, treating the children like they can actually understand
well-developed because characters. Very often, you know, you get it, which is why I think, bastions of children's animation like Disney and Pixar are Disney and Pixar because they tend to create more character-driven. Mm-hmm. You know, they create characters that you can fall in love with, whereas a lot of other, you know, animation that has come out, you know, can fizzle in the character department.
Just sort of like quick and funny.
Yeah, it's stock characters thrown in. So one of the reasons why we were so excited to take this on is because this is sort of the kind of film that we're talking about. It's beloved by people.
But they can also support that love with reasons, not just, well, I saw it when I was younger, so I love it. It's, no, there are things about it that I remember, even, you know, even somebody who saw it 15 years ago, like, oh, I still remember that one character. They were so incredible. It, you know, it moved me so much.
Right. But what I like is, so when I go to look up, because the first thing that we do when we're taking on something is, okay, is this a movie that actually everybody truly loves?
Yes.
You know, so when you go on and you see, you know, okay, I love Independence Day and everybody hated Independence. Okay, well, everybody pretty much considers Independence Day as a great summer action film. I mean, it's good. It really got that summer action movie genre going. You know, it's good.
Well, or like Gone with the Wind, which we had suggested of. Well, maybe some people take issue with it.
Critics
issues,
love that movie. People, I mean, it's kind of one of those timeless classics.
Even people who don't like the story say, oh, it's such a great film.
But when you look up The Last Unicorn, it has an audience approval rating of 87%. So near unanimous consent that this is a good movie.
Yes.
But it has a critic score of 57% and is rated rotten on Rotten Tomatoes. Most critics, well, I mean, I guess 57% is technically most. It's a majority like it. Close but enough. It's not an overwhelming majority, and even the reviewers that rated it positively, probably one third of those on Rotten Tomatoes, gave it kind of a middling review.
Well, and several of them admitted, I saw it when I was really young.
Right.
And that seems to be sort of a factor as to why it's, you know, held so dear.
Okay, so with these reasons in mind, and with these ratings in mind, and knowing that, you know, we've kind of got a mixed bag ahead of us, we are going to go drink, we are going to go watch The Last Unicorn, and we'll be back shortly.
She is a creature of legend. In an age of sorcery and savagery.
Well, what have we here?
Demons.
No!
And dragons. She may be the last unicorn.
All I want to know is if you've seen other unicorns like me somewhere in the world.
You can find the others if you are brave. They passed down all the roads long ago, and the Red Bull ran close behind them and covered their footprints.
Oh, I could never leave this forest. But I must know if I am the only unicorn left in the world.
The classic tale is now a classic animated adventure. Featuring the voices of Mia Farrow.
The spell was wrong, but there was true magic in it.
Alan Arkin.
My dear, you deserve the services of a great wizard, but I'm afraid you'll have to be glad of the aid of a second-rate pickpocket.
Jeff Bridges.
That is exactly what heroes are for.
It's you or me, Moth. Hand to hand to hand to hand.
Robert Klein. Christopher Lee.
I am King Haggard.
And the music of America.
It's the last unicorn.
A journey into the unknown. a mystery full of wonders and a fantasy beyond imagining.
Not that one.
Hmm? I want to know who she is.
Schmendrick the Light.
The last unicorn. The legend will live forever.
So, thanks to the magic of the podcast.
The magic of unicorns.
We're now back.
We're back.
After having watched The Last Unicorn.
We have now seen The Last Unicorn.
So I guess to start off, just sort of a quick recap for those who haven't seen it or saw it so long ago they don't really remember the plot. You have an as yet unnamed unicorn at the beginning in a forest.
It's never named.
Well, she gets named when she later, but
sort of.
She overhears from some wandering hunters and then a butterfly that she is the last one. She becomes upset at this and decides to go off on a quest.
I must find the others.
See if there are other unicorns.
First, we get the rules on how she cannot die. She's so immortal and very, very powerful. But the minute I leave this forest, I am incredibly frail.
Which she really is.
Oh, man. She just... Oh, buddy. This horse just keeps getting on trapped by all sorts of things.
So she heads off. And first, she's trapped by...
She's trapped by the Mama Fortuna character, voiced by the indomitable Angela Lansbury.
Who's just giving... all kinds of attitude and performance.
I am loving everything about Mammy Fortuna,
design.
Mama Fortuna, whatever the heck her name was. Her hat that is a tree with a crow in it. And she's got, like, she's a real crappy witch. She's got two spells down.
Yeah.
I can make things fall asleep for a few hours. And I can make things look like other things.
Well, plus they imply that she's bewitched the cages so that they can't just...
Yeah, so that the creatures can't leave. So she's trapped a harpy, another magical creature. But the rest of her little creatures are sort of fake. It's around this time that the unicorn meets our other protagonist, Schmendrick. Schmendrick is with you.
He's wonderful.
Schmendrick is with you. I might have to be Schmendrick for Halloween.
Can we just pause? Schmendrick.
Schmendrick. Schmendrick.
This has to be noted as a plot point. He goes to break her out of the cage because he's like, oh, you know, you're a true magical creature. True magical creatures shouldn't be caged. He tries maybe three or four spells on this cage, at one point shrinking it down to nearly crushing her. And then you find out he's had the keys the entire time.
He's like, well, sorry, you wanted a magician, but you got a pickpocket. And it's like...
If you had the keys, why didn't you just unlock the cage?
Why? Why can you not just unlock the cage? Why must you give me your crappy magic? Practice your crappy magic on somebody else's cage, not my cage. What the heck are you doing, dude?
Oh,
with the keys? You had... This is one of the... Hashtag, you had one job. You had one job, Schmendrick.
So bad.
God. And the guy, oh man, he just... I mean, I get it. You have to have the screw-up sorcerer. If you're an almighty sorcerer, then you know,
it's
the movie's
easy,
over,
yeah.
And he's gonna help her out and all this stuff. And we start to find out a little bit after this. So Schmendrick helps free the unicorn and the harpy.
Oh yeah, the unicorn then goes around freeing every cage. The harpy.
Frees the harpy, knowing full well that the harpy is going to turn around and try and kill her.
I do get her point, though, of it's another magical creature. Like,
show it
we're
respect.
Bound somehow, you know, show respect. The weirdest thing about the harpy isn't that. It's the fact that this harpy, apparently, as they're trying to get away, the harpy's distracted from killing them because it wants to kill Mama Fortuna.
Oh, yeah.
She captured her. And the unicorn goes, no, 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 don't run away from it. Running attracts immortal creatures.
Because this is Jurassic Park.
Apparently.
Yes.
Harpies function a lot like T-Rexes.
Well, you know T-Rex actually came from...
From the harpy.
From harpy. Tyrannosaurus Rex is actually Old Latin
for harpy.
For harpy.
for a child of Harpy.
And you've
Harpy King, actually.
A man in blue and a shimmering pure white unicorn can't spot them in the middle of the night.
Okay, so then we go off and we meet a rowdy band of criminals in the woods.
No, they're not criminals, they're the outlaws.
Yes, the outlaws.
Because there's always just, oh, those blanket outlaws.
Yes, so we meet some outlaws who accidentally get Schmendrick to do his first bit of real magic.
Yeah, he summons, like, an image.
A Robin Hood illusion while they're all telling stories about Robin Hood.
That was
nice.
Cute.
Yeah. Cute. Then all of the outlaws disappear and we do not hear from them for the rest of the movie. They're in it for about 45 seconds.
Mostly just to introduce him to the female outlaw who then joins with them, Molly.
Molly! I was going to say, I already forgot her name. I
have to say, one of my favorite characters.
She's probably my favorite character in the movie.
She's wonderful.
Yeah, she's Molly Grew, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's probably my favorite character in the movie. So now we've got our merry band. And that's like the first fourth of the movie or so. So we've got our triad of characters. And we also finally have our plot.
Yes, the quest is set.
It's around this time that we know that there's a Red Bull.
Yes, Mommy Fortuna.
He does not give anybody wings.
That.
There are no wings given here. This Red Bull does not like unicorns.
He chases them all down. And the stories kind of differ that they tell in the story of like, oh, well, he chases them to King Haggard. Or he like gives them to the king, or he's controlled by the king. No one's really sure.
Yeah,
but they
so
know
something
there's a bull,
about there's a king
and a bull.
He's got a bull,
and the unicorns are there.
And the bull has gone around the whole world and rounded up all the unicorns because reasons.
Yes,
as yet
they
unnamed
don't
reasons.
Really explain that.
Nope.
Part. Just we need to go there to find the thing.
And then it's shortly after this, after we meet Molly, that we finally meet the Red Bull.
Yes,
because. Travel montage musical sequence, which we will get to the music.
We will get to the music.
So travel montage musical sequence, we come to the castle.
No, they're near the castle, heading that direction, and the bull appears because he comes out at night and searches for unicorns.
Fire bull. Comes out as just this giant cloud of fire and becomes bull.
And instantly knows she is there, she's a unicorn, and starts chasing her.
Well, because she's still a unicorn at that point.
And she gives almost no fight.
No.
Just, oh no,
none.
A bull.
Oh God.
I'm captured.
Oh, I am become victim. I am, well, you got me.
Almighty, powerful, immortal creature. Oh no.
Oh crap. I guess better.
Guess I gotta go where you
are. Gotta go where
me.
You are, because, you know, reasons.
And so Molly is yelling at Schmendrick, save her.
And then Schmendrick, who has absolutely no idea how to do magic, just starts doing the worst spell ever. Do what you will, magic.
He's really just like throwing magic at her.
Just magic. Do something, please, God, help.
Magic, all of the magic things.
Help magic, and turns her into a woman, which is apparently the worst thing to happen to unicorns ever.
Oh yeah, Molly freaks out on him. To be fair, he makes the point of. And I just saved her life.
But the best thing to happen to a Pantene Pro-V hair commercial ever.
Yes.
Because this woman has hair for days.
No gravity.
No gravity. She is defying gravity.
It's everywhere.
I mean,
it's
her.
So lush.
She's got Elphaba flying all around her hair. She is just defying all of the gravity with her hair. She can bend down, it goes up. She can go sideways, it goes out. And this hair is doing all of the tricks. It's got all of the body. It's,
but being human, worst thing ever.
Worst thing ever. My God, by the way, this woman's head is giant and her body is like.
To be fair, she's played by Mia Farrow, who is. Teeny tiny.
Itty bitty person. Teeny tiny thing.
So as a human, they're like, oh, well, now we can get to the castle.
And
more
and
secretly.
Yeah, so we know that this king wants to collect unicorns.
So now we can sneak in.
And she's a, because she doesn't look like a unicorn anymore.
Exactly.
So we get to the castle. We go in. We say, hey, buddy. Hey, king. How are you doing? Because it's super easy to get an audience with this king who lives out on the coolest castle.
It's easy to get an audience because he has zero people.
Four. No, he has four. He has four men-at-arms, as he tells us. Four.
And
we saw all four
son.
Of them.
And that's it.
And him and his adopted son. Ooh, big plot twist there. Find out he's adopted because, obviously. Obviously, adopted son who's actually a good person. Who instantly falls in love.
Oh, it was beyond Disney instant of... Oh, the man. Only attractive woman I've ever seen in my entire life, we must be in love.
Well, I mean, it's like, come on, have you seen the guy that I've had to live with my whole life? Have you seen this ugly dude? He's hideous. You are pretty, and you kind of shimmer in the moonlight. I like you. I like the cut of your jib, and I like your gravity-defying hair. Let
and
us make beautiful,
that you stare
tall,
at me
thin,
with vacant
blonde babies.
Eyes and don't know what's going on all the time.
Your giant purple eyes that for some reason when I look into, they show me the forest and they do not show me myself.
Why is he developing a weird accent?
I do not know, but I think Antonio Banderas just became king or the prince, whoever we're talking about now, and is this man.
So they convince the king to hire them on as, like, Molly for the cook.
But again,
Smendrick for the magician.
After we meet a super cool character.
But they don't give her a job. She's just, well, hire us too, and she's just gonna kind of wander.
Creepy dark wizard comes in.
He was great.
Mobius strip,
like,
or whatever.
Malbach.
I'm a wine. He is the wizard of wine. Anyway, and he's just like, he just summons this wizard and is like, hey, I'm hiring him because you don't make me happy. This king just wants to find happiness in the world. And so you don't make me happy, so I'm going to hire this guy. And then creepy, cool character with amazing character design is like, you will die. And then vanishes.
It's terrific, though. He's just got this random, ominous statement of like, oh, your death has come in by the front door,
but it won't leave that way. And then just vanishes. And then another
never
cool character, gone. Gone from the movie.
He's there for
after
about
he says,
I'm seconds.
Not. But he, like, gives that foreboding statement, like, I am not gotten rid of so easily, or whatever.
And then the second he sees the unicorn, he tries to summon, like, a tornado.
Thunder. I'm storming at you.
She, like, glares at it and, like, glints.
Yes.
And it goes away.
She does a lot of glinting in this movie.
Yeah, she glints a lot.
There's a lot of glinting. Her hair is Elphaba, but the rest of her is Glinta.
Her outfit's like
did you
metal
like Glinta?
Threads or something.
Pun? I did a
I
pun for
it.
You. Did you enjoy that?
I did.
Good. Last one ever. Ever.
Is it your uni pun?
Oh, God. My one and only.
Oh.
So super cool wizard guy.
Gone.
Wizard of Wine. Gone. Just
The movie's been moving at a pretty nice clip.
And then it just stops.
Stops,
and then it's just one montage after another, which, Lord almighty, we will get to the music, I swear, but then there's a plot about a talking pirate psychic cat.
With, like, an eye patch and a peg leg?
Who doesn't need the eye patch.
She is fantastic, and also one of the best parts.
But again,
so weird.
Just like Mama Fortuna, and just like Wizard of Wine... Super cool character, great character design, comes in, he's in the movie for 30 seconds, and then he's gone.
Yeah, all of the really interesting, just really unique, fantastic character designs
are just there to sort of push
brief.
The plot.
Yes.
Yeah, they're there, they push the plot, and then they vanish. And it's like, well, I wanted to spend more time with talking psychic pirate cat.
Because he was fascinating.
And I could have done with a little less Schmendrick at this point, because,
yes.
Oh my God, that guy gets annoying. And a little bit more talking psychic pirate cat. To be perfectly honest, I would like to see a follow-up movie where the bad guys are talking psychic pirate cat, Mama Fortuna,
back from the dead,
and the Wizard of Wine.
Oh, yeah.
Mobius dude.
He was great.
Whatever the heck his name was. I just want all three of those people to get together and like,
skeleton.
Come for the unicorns. So, talking psychic pirate cat...
Actually moves the plot forward by saying... Here's a riddle about how you can find the bull, and I'm a cat, so of course I can't give you a straight answer, which...
Yeah,
right,
sure,
that makes
you're
sense.
A cat, got
we
it.
We get it. And so they find a clock, and they have to pretend to get the skeleton drunk.
Yeah, the skeleton gets drunk on nothing.
Quick pause, before this scene happens, you find out that Amalthea, which is the name they gave to the unicorn...
Yes, Lady Amalthea.
Woman, ...is that she's fallen in love with the Prince Lear...
Yes.
For no discernible reason, except they're both young and attractive.
Yep. We're both tall, we're both thin, we're both blonde. I get it. The writers want us to be together.
So, all right. There's that. And she's forgetting that she's a unicorn, she's becoming more human.
Yeah, she's been a person for about 6 hours at this point.
Well, but they're giving her, you know, like, oh, that's the ticking clock that's forcing you to move on really
yes,
quick.
Yeah.
Because if you stay human too long, you'll be human forever and never a unicorn again.
But
so,
I will say,
yeah.
The movie makes that hint very subtly.
Yes.
Like, it's a very subtle hint. Like, it was something we kind of had to talk amongst ourselves and just decide that that was what the plot was doing. Is that when she became a human, she started to forget.
Yes.
Like, because Molly earlier had said, oh, it's going to drive her mad being a unicorn. Because she's never seen one. Nobody's seen a unicorn. But she, this Molly girl, knows all the rules of being a unicorn, apparently.
Because apparently unicorns in this universe don't have emotions.
Yeah.
She says, like, oh, I can feel sorrow, but I don't feel regret.
Yeah, that's, yeah,
I
at the end
don't
she
feel
says,
love.
Yeah,
she's
they just sort of exist as perfect, untouched beings.
Yes, so apparently the human emotion and mortality would...
And I get that, but
yeah.
That wasn't something that was... I mean,
you just
had to infer that, and it was really very well occluded,
yes.
I feel like. Okay, so we find out that the unicorns are being held captive under the sea.
Yeah, the Red Bull drove them into the sea because looking at them makes the king happy.
Yes, so the king...
Weirdest reason.
Wants to be happy, so he captures all the unicorns and sticks them in the ocean. Not really sure how these horses are staying alive. These unicorns are...
Well, they're immortal, but they don't really explain, like, do they swim?
Well, they can die, but that's the thing. They can die if they leave their home forest.
It's really
so
not well explained.
Why are they
part.
In the ocean and not dead?
Well, and
they're
magic.
Become...
Do they grow gills? Maybe?
Like, I mean, they kind of, like, at the end of the movie, sort of backsplain it by, like, having the seafoam sort of turn into unicorns, or did they just become
maybe.
Part of the ocean? I don't know.
That
again,
part's
very,
very poorly
vague.
Explained.
Yeah.
Yes.
This part of the movie where they start having to come up with reasons for things that they never explained in the first hour. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, we've got a 90-minute movie. Well, we took 60 minutes of it and didn't explain anything, so now let's take 10 minutes and make this giant, convoluted mess of a plot.
Yeah, so it's a little confusing, but they get down to the bull's cavern, and of course the prince is there because he's following her.
Just kind of appears.
He's like, oh, well, I love her, so I follow her.
I love her.
There
she's
you go.
Pretty, and she glints.
She glints
very,
a lot.
Very glinty.
Oh, and in the bull cave, they're loudly talking about the fact that she's a unicorn, so the bull attacks.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yep.
And Schmendrick does his magic thing again.
Magic, go at her, magic!
And she turns back into a unicorn and is being chased out of the cave by the bull. The bull is backing her into the ocean. And they're like, Schmendrick, help her, help her. He's like, oh, that's not a job for wizards, that's for heroes. So Lear, like, rushes forward to help her and falls down injured, practically dead.
Yeah, because the minute anybody gets around this bull, it's just like, ah, well, I mean, I guess you're just going to win because you're a bull.
And she sees him injured and, like, her being driven off the way to say... Are implying, like, oh, she finally finds that fighting spirit.
She's got some... now she has now she's touched by emotion.
So her horn glows at the bull.
And she becomes brave.
And he just decides, like, well...
Well, I'm beaten now. Because
I'm done.
I mean, whew.
I mean, I don't have size on her at all.
I'm not, like, the size of, like, the frickin' castle or anything.
And so she backs him into the water, and all the horses that are kind of also seafoam... rush out onto the shore. The castle is toppled into the ocean along with the king, who we are assuming is dead.
Yeah, because,
look,
of course, the
good.
Heroes can't dispatch the king.
No.
Because they're good.
He just dies because he's evil.
Yeah, he's just so evil. And the return of the unicorns is so perfect and pure upon the earth that just this evil castle must go into the sea.
And
I
so
am become death.
He's dead. She heals the prince with her horn. And is like, well, see ya.
And then she goes back to the forest, and that is the movie.
Well, she does... The weird thing is she doesn't say goodbye to the prince, whom she was supposedly in love with.
Yes.
She waits until he rides off, and then that night says goodbye to Schmendrick,
who
they imply is kind of getting together with Molly at the end.
I mean...
They hold hands. They're in separate sleeping
bags.
Hey,
this was 1982. Holding hands was akin to, you know...
But she doesn't say goodbye to the prince she's supposedly so in love with that she almost stayed human for. She waits till he's gone and then says goodbye to Schmendrick, which was a little
weird.
And
she explains to him, well, now I'm different because I've been a human and I have emotion now.
Yeah, she said she's like, oh, I'm the only unicorn that has experienced regret.
And so she...
Like, okay,
and
that's
then
interesting.
She trots off back to the forest.
Yeah.
Unicorns are back in the world, so forests are good. And we assume that everybody lived happily ever after, except for Prince Lear.
who's now alone. And
who's now alone. His father is dead. His home is in the sea.
Oh, the pirate cat would be dead then if he was in the castle.
So here's the thing. I'm assuming that he's off.
He got out. He got out.
I'm assuming he's off with the Wizard of Wine and a resurrected Mama Fortuna, and they're getting ready for the last unicorn too. Next, the penultimate unicorn. Now we've got two coming at us. We're gonna get a green bull.
We're gonna get a
green bull and a blue bull. We're gonna get two blue bulls so that we can say blue bulls for a 90-minute movie. Yes. Oh, this is happening. The Last Unicorn 2, Blue Bulls Edition. Yes! Make it happen.
Anyway. That's the end of the film.
That's the end of the film. So, our reasons were...
Okay, so the main reasons we had were the music.
The music, the animation, it's a character-driven story.
Yes.
We like the King character, so
and
the King...
And the tragic love story.
And the tragic... Well, her tragic choice.
Yes.
Yeah, her sort of the evolution of this unicorn.
Yes.
So let's just take a minute. So the animation.
Beautiful.
I mean, for 1982, I mean, really, for any time, I think it's a beautifully detailed film. I think it really does hold up as far as animation goes, especially of the time.
And it's, you know, it's designed by Rankin Bass, especially anyone who's seen their other productions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really distinct style to it, so... Some of the characters, especially like Mama Fortuna, the cat, have just this incredible character
detail.
Design and beautiful detail.
Yeah.
They're so interesting to just look at.
Which
you
is
would
why
want
was,
a print of them on your wall.
Right,
they're
which so is why I was so upset that they weren't given much to do in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, Mama Fortuna had the most, the largest part out of the three of them. But those three characters really just were very special moments. But can I just say, that giant talking tree with massive boobs.
That was just
perfection.
The strangest moment in the
movie. But the most perfect. I mean, it's just an example
of late
70s, early 80s weirdness. And it's just so
Schmendrick
perfect.
Schmendrick is tied up to a tree by the bandits and he does magic and it turns the tree sentient. And it's this, like, large... breasted tree woman who's like, oh,
who apparently also has control over the weather.
Oh, I love you.
I love it. Yeah. And then she sees the unicorn and sees, you can't have him, you hussy.
It's so weird.
It's just, it's weird and strange, but it's so perfect.
And
it's
such fun animation.
It's fun.
It moves really well.
Yes. But again, there's a lot of detail to these characters. The characters themselves have a lot of detail. I mean, even,
you know. It makes them more, you know, connectable.
Yes, absolutely. I think Molly is well done.
Very expressive.
Yeah, I think Schmendrick is well done. I think everybody has a beautiful character design to them.
Well, and say what you want about the musical montages, which we'll get to in a moment.
I feel like
the
we can...
scenery for it.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yeah,
lovely
absolutely.
Scenery.
So let's go ahead and talk about this music. So the music was done by the 80s. I'm going to be very generous here. 80s rock band, America. What are they famous for? Is there a song that they're famous for?
I don't know if there's really one that they're known for.
I don't know. Like, I feel like if Glee didn't cover it, then they're probably not an 80s band of worth.
I mean, it's not the worst thing ever. It's sort of bland, sort of forget. Like a lot of Bryan Adams music, it's just sort of like... Oh, okay, well, there's music here. But the fact that it happens so often, every few minutes there's a musical number and a montage.
Oh, they have... So I went to iTunes. Their song, A Horse With No Name.
Oh,
Rode Through
yeah.
the Desert on a Horse
I
With No
like
Name.
That.
Yeah, so there's
that.
I literally have no other... I have no idea what any of the rest of these songs are. So that's
but
the only one I've ever heard
they're
of.
They're not dreadful. They're just sort of bland and forgettable.
And they
but
have
it
nothing
just
to do
happens
with the plot.
So often.
And I get it. It's the 80s, and we're trying to have, like, that cool...
But it's not, like, driving the story at all. It's not helping you connect with the
no,
emotion.
They are
it's
not
just
ballads. They
like,
are not...
And pause for a music break.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's resume the story.
Yeah. Was America a big enough deal in 1982? They were like, well, we're going to get
they're
a bigger...
Not.
I mean, it's like, you know, oh, music by Lady Gaga or something. You know, like, of the time. They got some big act to draw in an even larger crowd. Oh, let's celebrate America.
That's what Labyrinth did with David Bowie. A really well-known...
Or, like, Across the Universe with the Beatles,
Really well-known. Even if you don't like their music, you've heard of them, you know who they are.
Was America a big enough band in 1982?
No, not big enough to really warrant throwing in song after
Neither of us were alive in 1982, so I can't really... I'm just assuming. Song I've ever heard is one.
There's just so much of it.
It's a lot. And the thing
most
is...
Most movies you have, maybe one or two montages. This is five or six.
I mean, so the movie is kind of split in half. There's before you get to the castle and after the castle, and it's pretty much 45 minutes and 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The first 45 minutes probably has, three or four songs,
mm-hmm.
maybe, interspersed. But boy, howdy, they get to that castle.
Ugh.
I mean, it's like they say four lines at each other, and then there's another song.
Well, and she sings a song as the unicorn about how sad she is.
Oh, God.
And then the prince sings a song about how in love he is.
Now
and then
that
they,
I'm a woman.
Oh, so bad. And then they
Mia
duet,
Farrow, darling,
and
you have...
she's in a dream world with him, and they're birds, but they turn into themselves, and there's a unicorn. It's just...
I mean, Mia,
yikes.
Honey, you gave the world many things. Your
music
son, Ronan,
was not one of them.
Is just, it's beautiful. And he, but the, oh, buddy, your voice is just not, you should not be the main singer of a musical. And this didn't need to be a musical. It did not need to be a musical at all.
Because I felt like I was really getting into the story, but the songs would just sort of jar you out of the plot.
Because, again, they
were
not ballads.
Because you're getting invested,
I mean...
And then, okay, 2 minute pause.
Right. The unicorn has a song, the prince has a song. But other than that, the songs are just America singing some rock ballad crap while they're going places. It's like the animators didn't know how to get these people from point A to point B.
Without
and then from B to C. It's
music.
Or, just cut to it. Fine. Oh, and then you just toss away a line. Oh, well, that journey was crazy. Remember the dolphins we saw? All those dolphins.
Oh,
hey, was that a unicorn in the ocean?
Okay.
No, forget that.
The one musical number is fun. When they sing a line about, the narwhal swimming and you see him, jumping out of the water by the castle. I just love animated narwhals.
It's just awful. It's awful. I cannot hear the word narwhal without the elf.
So far we're agreeing, the animation, great reason. The music, no.
No, that music is bad. It's,
sorry,
it's
that's
not
invalid.
Good. It wasn't even good for 1982. I'm sorry. It's just... It takes you right out of it. Character-driven story, rather than sort of an action-driven... I will agree, this is not an action-driven story.
It is very internal, a lot of the struggles.
Would you say that the unicorn... I mean, the main character is a fully realized character?
Mm.
I mean, I feel like they make Schmendrick fairly relatable.
Yes.
I feel like they make Molly the most relatable.
She is incredibly relatable.
I feel like in every movie, every decent movie, it doesn't even have to be a good movie, but every decent movie, the writers pick a character to sort of represent the audience.
Yes, and I think in this case it really is Molly.
I think it's Molly. She's a normal person.
She talks about how she used to be young and innocent and, wish for a unicorn and hoping
exactly.
to see
she's
one.
Always wanted to see a unicorn.
She's been a little embittered by time. She's experienced negative things like being rounded up with this group of outlaws. She's still looking for where she really wants to be with life.
Mm-hmm. Just looking for that spark of childhood innocence and that, what made... what made growing up such an exciting thing to look forward to. And now she's an adult.
She really is, I think, the most well-developed character.
I think she really is. The king,
you
though,
see her coming and, caring for the different characters and interacting.
I mean, I feel like the king just needs to be on, some medication. He's just, I think he has clinical depression.
I'm kind of back and forth on the king. I sort of liked him.
You did?
I think he was an interesting
is
villain.
He, okay,
because
is,
his... A
is
lot of
he
movies,
evil?
Not completely, which is what I kind of liked about him. He's just this horribly upset, depressed man looking for happiness, and they show him I had this magician who was supposed to make me happy, and he didn't. I adopted my son, which was, diverting for a little while, but it didn't last. And I like that he's not just sort of, I'm evil, and I want to control the unicorns. It's, they're the only thing that has ever made me happy.
Yeah, I don't think he doesn't see himself as evil.
I like that as his motivation. It makes him more interesting and more relatable.
And the thing is, I don't think he actually has a kingdom.
No,
he's got
the castle
with the four guys.
Yeah.
Which, where do they live? Like, are they, do they live in another kingdom?
They,
like,
don't really explain that.
You know, and then they're just kind of gone. So, and there's the prince who isn't mistreated, but he is stolen.
Well, no, he says somebody left him on the door.
He left him on the door? I thought he said he saw the...
No, he said he, like, saw him on his doorstep and thought, I'll try having a son. Maybe that'll... will really bring me happiness.
So, yeah, I don't want my kids, so let me leave it at this creepy, mostly abandoned castle and hope for the best.
But the king, way more interesting than the prince. Leagues more interesting than the prince.
Yeah,
the prince,
that prince
suffers from early Disney syndrome of, like, well, I'm pretty, and I do heroic things.
I mean, yeah,
he's
in a
little
sense
bit
of,
more than that, but not by much.
I mean, like, sort of like Snow White's prince.
Yeah, just very nice.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, trying to do a good thing, but not really developed. They don't explain how he turned out to be such a good and noble person when being raised with, like, this
grouchy, cantankerous old man.
And his four guards. They don't explain... how would a child grow up in this environment and still turn out to be a good person?
I mean, so I feel like to say that something's a character... I mean, when you say a character-driven story, is... It's more of an internal story. It's kind of difficult for films to be character-driven. There are some that are very well done, you know, that can take a character and develop them... But they usually have smaller casts. They have usually have smaller, more direct plots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you can have time to have, because you can't really spend time inside a character's head in film. In a book, oh, absolutely, character driven stories are how books are good.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, a curse of the medium is that you can't always get in a character's head as easily as, you know, in a book when you're reading the character's thoughts and going with it. Film, you're trying to portray it and. It,
you know,
worked,
but,
more or less with different characters. I think Schmendrick, you know,
Schmendrick
has some
was mostly there. I feel like Molly was there.
That's terrific. I didn't really think the unicorn did that much as a character.
I mean, so the unicorns are just sort of there to exist as perfect beings. Like, they kind of balance out the world from darkness. So there's darkness and then there's unicorns, which represent sort of goodness.
She, you know, she hints at with the scene with the harpy of, oh, well, I have to free her because she's my sister.
She's sort of the other half of...
of the magical coin.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get that. But I don't feel like that... I mean, there was much of a character to her. Now, there is something to be said for the fact that she does develop emotions in the last 5 minutes of the movie.
But there's so little time given to that.
And,
which made it hard.
Right. I mean, but I get that she is different. And there's something to her. And she's an interesting character to look at and to be part of the story. But it is sort of, you know, an underused... I mean, how many times has a magically transforming unicorn been used as a character in a movie? You know, you've got an opportunity there.
Well, they hinted at some interesting things, but they didn't really get developed, I think, because it was at the end of the movie... where she's been human for a little while now, she's starting to forget. She doesn't quite remember that she was a unicorn. She, you know, at one point asks Molly, you know, what are we doing here? What am I looking for? I feel like there was something, but I've forgotten it. That's really interesting in her trying to start dealing with emotions of, you know, I've never really experienced things before, but now I do sort of care for this prince for undisclosed reasons, or I'm, you know, feeling more attached. I mean, towards the end, she even says... oh, Lyre, or Lear, whatever, don't let them change me back. I want to stay here. I want to love you. We can get married. But that's a really sudden change that they didn't give a lot of time to. Like, oh, look, her character is changing and is really coming to appreciate the emotions and the chance to be human. It was so rushed at the end that they didn't have time to show why this is an important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they needed to have picked a plot, almost. I mean, I think they could have done a movie about her being trapped in that circus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like Mama Fortuna could have been the big bad.
Oh, she was wonderful.
I mean, I feel, and Mama Fortuna could have had a psychic pirate cat. God, that is such an interesting character. And it's never explained why he's got a peg leg or
why he knows things. How does he talk?
Right. Like, why is he the only talking animal in the whole movie other than the freaking unicorn?
Was he, like, a pet of the sorcerer? And he just decided not to go with him?
I thought at first, like, it might have been the sorcerer.
Oh, that'd be a nice
twist. In disguise, because the sorcerer said, you can't get rid of me that easily.
And the sorcerer kind of wants them to
to get the king back. Sure. Okay. Like, I thought maybe the cat could have been the sorcerer.
That would have been neat.
That would have been cool. They didn't do that.
Yeah, just a lot at the end seemed to sort of rush.
Yeah.
In the beginning, you could have quickened up to give you more time at the end to develop these more interesting details.
I mean, and I get that on an adventure story that you need it to sort of, you know, have spots where you stop. You know, the big thing about, like, an adventure story, a road trip movie, something where the protagonists are going somewhere isn't where they end up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't watch Britney Spears in Crossroads for the big musical number at the end.
No,
you
it's
watch
the
it
fun in the middle.
The fun in the middle of the way. So, I mean, I get that you need interesting places to stop, but don't make those interesting places to stop more interesting
than the ending.
Then, I mean, they created an entire plot at the end.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. This king, and he's sad, and there's unicorns in the ocean, and there's a fireball after them, and it's all this, and
they really didn't explain the fireball.
No, where
because
did he get the bowl?
When you see the wizard, you think, oh, well,
maybe
the wizard probably
the
is controlling him for the king, because the king says, get me the unicorn, so I'll
nope.
make the bowl.
Nope.
But because when the wizard's gone, the bowl should be gone if he was controlling it, but that's still there, so.
And I get it, kids movie fantasy, some things don't necessarily need to be explained, so there's some of this that I can accept. It's aimed
okay.
at kids. I'll take that. That's fine. I'll go there with the film. But I feel like something else needed to be fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there was enough of a plot. But the problem is, that means that something either needs to have a really rich plot, you know, full-on adventure, you know, the film adaptations of Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
or, no, the film adaptation of The Hobbit. That is just, it's just action for action's sake. It has nothing to do with the book. Nothing. And it's not
yeah.
really character-driven either. It's just action. It's just spectacle. But if you're not going to give us that, I mean, yes, they give us some spectacle in the visual nature of the film, but I don't know that they're giving us plot along
There's
with that.
There's not a lot of plot. And I don't know, just if we're talking about one of the reasons being the characters,
mm-hmm.
I would say, like, I find that a legitimate reason in this film for every character
except for the unicorn.
She was just, and she starts off, it could be just the fact that, oh, well, at the beginning she's a unicorn, she, you know, embodies perfection. She doesn't have a lot of emotion, which they touch on the unicorns not having. But she's just so bland. And, I mean, she's not a terrible character, but she's very bland. Everyone
yes.
else is outshining her in terms of being really interesting. Somebody you
and
want to watch more.
And that's hard to do because
of.
She glints a lot.
And she sort of starts to develop character at the end, but it's, you know, she doesn't drive a lot of her own plot. She goes out searching. But then, you know, she doesn't free herself from the thing Schmendrick does.
Even when
He's
Schmendrick and Molly,
her to run.
Yeah, even when they're trying to figure out where in the castle this bull is held, she's just sleeping. She
well,
sleeps
yeah.
all day.
The bull first comes to find them, and she just runs
cool.
and then gives up.
Guess I'm captured now.
Schmendrick turns her into a human. She's like, well, I guess I'll just go with you guys to the castle. The whole point of the quest is she's the one wanting to go find the unicorns. She does zero work to find them.
So
she
is there
just
a choice?
Sort of
because one of the reasons that we were given is that she makes this grand choice. You know, the choice to... But I don't think that she made the choice to become a unicorn again. Schmendrick just sort of does that at her.
Well, Schmendrick sort of intonates, like, that there's a choice. Because he says, oh, well, because Molly tells him, let her stay human. You know, she loves this guy. Let them just,
yeah.
you know, have the happily ever after. And he's, you know, even Lear eventually agrees with Schmendrick of, no, you know, you can't just stop a quest. You know, heroes understand that you have to, you know, see it through and
yeah.
accomplish the thing. She doesn't really seem to have a lot of choice in the matter.
Yeah, she just, I mean,
he says she starts to understand, but
yeah.
they don't show that. She doesn't say anything about it. he just turns her back.
I mean, yes, she drives the bull into the ocean.
And she does say, oh,
she'll
regret at the end.
Yeah.
Which shows, like, oh, well, I guess I kind of do wish it might have gone another way, but it didn't. But they don't really show a choice.
So I think that this movie has, I mean, it's better than what I remembered it being.
Mm-hmm.
I think the film has a few things going for it. I think it's definitely, I mean, oh, totally beautiful.
Beautiful.
It is a gorgeous piece of animation. I really think
even the parts that don't really push the story forward are still beautiful.
Yeah, they are beautiful. It's a nice spectacle. Some of those montage sequences are just little didn't need to happen.
No, they're kind of pointless, but at least, you know, they're giving you some nice scenery.
Yeah. Characters, I mean, I got just middle of the road for me. I mean, I feel like the most interesting characters in the movie
got the least amount of screen
time. And then Molly is good, and Shmendrick is okay, and the rest of them are just kind of interchangeably bland characters.
This is going to be a weird comparison, but did you ever see the animated Swan Princess?
Yes. Yes, I did.
It suffers from the same sort of issue, where if your main drive of, like, oh, the heart of this is there's this love story, and she has to give up her chance for human love with him to save the unicorns. It's sort of like the whole Swan Princess thing of, if your two main characters that are creating this epic love story that's going to be the heart of it, if they're bland and kind of forgettable, it takes away from it. You don't feel like, oh, these people just belong together. They have such a connection. This is going to be so heartbreaking when they don't end up together. It's like, oh, well, they shared a kiss and a song. Sad?
Right. I mean, I don't care enough about the prince. I don't see...
They don't make you invest
enough. And the whole
enough.
Instant, you know, we're both pretty and tall thing doesn't jive with me. I mean, I get it. It's a kid's story, but I don't know that that's a story that needs to be for kids either. It's, you know, I don't know if that's really the right message. But, so I don't really know that the characters are super great. I mean, I feel like there's a few... But I feel like they created some interesting characters, but I don't feel like those characters were given enough due for it to be called a character-driven story, you know, with...
I think they started out with some good characters, but I agree, they didn't flesh it out enough.
That freaking butterfly.
Oh, the butterfly's really insufferable.
Make the butterfly
no
stop.
No wonder I remembered the butterfly from the one time I saw it, like, oh, there was a butterfly, wasn't there? Because he's so
awful.
Obnoxious.
It's the worst.
He adds almost nothing.
Except 5 minutes of my life that I will never get back.
And just, like, random song snippets and flitting and stupid jokes.
So, would you recommend this movie to a friend?
I would.
Okay. If you were recommending it to a friend, what would you say are...
I have to say, overall, I think the reasons are, for the most part, valid. I mean, there are one or two things.
I mean, I think there's two valid reasons. I think some of the characters are cute, and I think that it's a beautifully animated film.
I think
the music
was not a good reason, but
I would love to. An edited version of this film where they take out the musical.
Oh,
it would
be so much better.
I mean, it would probably be about 25 minutes, but I would watch the crap out of that 25 minutes.
But just the reasons I would recommend it are, one, the animation, because I think that is a great reason. And it's beautiful. I love the Rankin Bass stuff. I think they do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Their design is just, it's so quirky. It's so different. You know, they're not trying to be Disney. You can really tell that they're putting, you know, a different sort of thought into it, sure. Some of the voice acting is just terrific. I mean, Angela Lansbury, Christopher Lee, those are fun people to watch because you know they're really putting it in for the characters. I think some of the character stuff is interesting. One of the main reasons I think I would recommend it, though, that, you know, even despite all of its flaws that I think it holds merit, is that it's asking questions that you don't get in a lot of kids' movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's taking kids a little bit more seriously than certain, like, lighthearted fun movies would, where it's bringing up things like, you know, what does it mean to really, like, embody the magician that you want with Shmendrick, or, you know, with the unicorn, you know, what it feels like to be completely alone and different, you know, the, you know, journey of going out and searching for others like you, the different trials you're going to have to face, and just growing up and experiencing emotion, how that might change you. you know, the fact that even though their relationship isn't long, like, it does affect her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, those are just interesting things you don't always see a lot of. And really, I think the King is just an interesting villain that you don't see a lot of.
I think he's the worst villain in the movie.
I really liked him.
Okay.
I don't know that I'd want him to be... I think as a final villain, Mama Fortuna was much more.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say. I feel like the end of the movie with him could have been the middle of the movie, and
yes,
the big bad could have been Mama Fortuna.
Mama Fortuna is so dynamic and interesting.
Yeah, 100%.
But I really liked this sort of quiet sadness of the King. Something about that was just.
You're so poetic.
So I just loved it.
So. Okay. Well,
I don't think it's amazing.
I think it's a mixed review then, because it was better than I remembered it.
Yeah.
I still don't think it makes for a good movie. I think it makes for a middling movie at best.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's something I would watch all the time. Like, there are, like, Miyazaki films I could watch.
That's the thing.
All
I mean,
the time.
And Miyazaki, Studio Ghibli films were coming out in the 80s.
And you could just watch them over and over again because they're that good. This one, I don't think holds up that well.
I mean,
but
the rebirth of Disney in the late 80s, 89 with
Little Mermaid.
I mean, if you want that sort of fish out of water, you know, one thing becoming another thing, watch that. I mean, I feel like other movies did it better. I mean, if you want another 80s, well, of course, this actually was Disney, but The Black Cauldron was an interesting sort of epic animated fantasy. That really, I don't think, got its due, you know. It was an incredibly expensive film, and so, you know, most people didn't know what to do with it, because I kind of think, like this, it was, the audience was mixed. They didn't, at times, it was kind of for adults that watch animated films, and kind of for kids, with a overly simplified plot in places where it needed to be a bit more complex. But I feel like something like The Black Cauldron, you know, some of the other Disney movies, The Little Mermaid, that kind of thing of the time, I feel like those would be a little bit better to introduce. But I just still don't think that enough of the reasons are valid. I think a pretty spectacle doesn't make a good film.
I don't know that I would say it's amazing, but I think it's worth watching at least once, because it does hold some merit. I would watch it just for the best scenes alone and the weird character design. But I have to agree, I don't think it's amazing, and it's not even the best Rankin Bass movie, really.
Oh, God, no. No, not at all. Rankin and Bass made many, many other treasures of films. And I think some of the reason that those other movies worked is because they spent time, you know, fleshing out a plot, and it was sort of one main plot.
Well, and they had a better idea of where they wanted to go with it. This one, it meanders a little too much.
I mean, even when they're doing something, have you ever seen the film The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus by Rankin and Bass?
Oh,
the animated?
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even something like that, at least they sort of, it's about one person doing one thing and growing into, I mean, sure, there's a lot of craziness that happens, and it's a different origin story for Santa Claus, but, you know, at least it sort of follows one path, and it, you know, there's some interesting epic fantasy quality to it. But this one, I just, you know, I don't really know that this quite gets there for me.
I like it. I think you should, you know, watch it at least once if you're someone who really enjoys animated movies, if you're already a Rankin Bass fan, if you happen to really like unicorns, or fantasy movies in general. I think it's a lot of fun, but I have to agree with you. I think just in terms of your time, there are better choices out there.
Yeah. Okay, so if you would love us to skewer your favorite childhood films, you can find us on Facebook. We're facebook.com/becausereasonspodcast, I think. Go to Facebook, search Because Reasons Podcast. We'll be there. You'll see our little animated faces. We are also on Twitter. You can tweet us at ReasonsCast.
Yes, you can send us, you know, how you liked the reviews, or if you have a personal suggestion of, oh, there's this thing I really love that everyone else doesn't, you know, feel free to send it.
Absolutely. You can message us through Facebook. You can leave a post there. Let everybody just sort of discuss. You can tweet at us. We would love to hear from you. You know, let us know, guys. How are you loving the show? Are you liking this sort of format? Is there anything you you want to see added? Is there anything that you want us to stop saying? We'd love to hear from you guys, sort of what what are your reasons for listening? Do you find our reasons valid? And what would your alternative be to The Last Unicorn? Or do you think it's just the paragon of animated amazingness?
In which case, sorry for all the crap we just gave you.
Did you have a favorite moment?
My favorite moment, I think, would have to be the psychic pirate peg-legged cat, because he's so bizarre. You see him earlier in the movie briefly, and like then all of a sudden, a scene or two later, he's talking, and Molly's just like, oh, yep, talking pirate cat, sure.
He's
so great.
I am living for Mama Fortuna's hat. Which is also a tree with a bird living in it.
It is
living for it. And I just love her character's design. Everything about that little crazy circus, I loved it. So until next time, guys. We've got to come up with a sign-off.
We need a sign-off so badly.
Should we quote the movie?
Schmendrick is with you.
Until next time, remember, Schmendrick is with you.